Hello, Sales Change listeners. This is episode 12 of the Sales Change podcast with Chris Hickey from Mercury Hampton. Mercury Hampton are a recruitment company based near Manchester in the UK. They use technology such as video introductions, candidate comparisons, and McQuaig behavioural tests to deliver the right person first time. They've got an outstanding retention rate with 96% of their placements still in post after 12 months and 93% after 2 years. Chris Hickey and Jonathan Salas started Mercury Hampton just 2 years ago. We discover their why and also their how using the five Ps. Chris also delivers his top three tips to any young sales staff looking to step up and lead. We have a chat about the coronavirus pandemic and how it's affecting them and other industries. This is a mega episode. You're going to enjoy it. If you want to find out more information about the episode, go and visit the website. It's www.saleschange.co.uk. Whilst you're there, sign up for the newsletter. You might enjoy it. Enjoy the episode. Hello, Chris. Welcome to the Sales Change podcast. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. So, Mercury Hampton, recruitment firm. Yeah. Tell me a bit about them.
Well, you've worked with the business on the other side of the fence, so I suppose you've got a little bit of pre-exposure to what we're about, the services we offer. The firm was, we were established 2 years ago, relatively new organisation, but absolutely flown up until this COVID-19 situation, which has derailed absolutely everybody. But 2 years ago, we were in a situation, we were in a 6-foot-6 room, and that's myself and my colleague, Jonathan Salas. And you know, literally on the 7th of March, we signed a lease on a 22-man size office. And then 7 days later, we're at home on Zoom and Microsoft Teams. So, but the business was founded to, there's a massive gap in the recruitment market. I suppose when you work in the recruitment industry, it's quite easy to see, but when you're not, it's not as visible.
What is that gap, Chris?
There's a major gap in speed versus quality, and I'll define what that is. Speed is generally what I refer to as CV supply contingency recruitment companies. It's just, we find a CV, we send the CV, you know, anyone can do that. There's no skill involved whatsoever. They go onto job site, key in a couple of keywords, and then send a CV. The executive search world, it is very much quality focused, credit to them, but it's very costly, very slow, and the advances in technology across both of them are quite poor. So the aim of Mercury Hampton was to establish a business that could bridge that gap and digitize most of the selection process whilst offering other services, other bolt-on services that other recruitment companies can't provide.
Like what?
Okay, so Mercury Hampton have got 15 different HR services which are still all related to the recruitment sector, but we believe that the service offering that we're able to provide is relatively unique for the size of organisation that we are, and that those services range from mechanical testing, making sure that all of our candidates are qualified to do the position they say they can do. Psychometric testing is a massive area in our profession that is misused. Sending someone a Thomas International test at the final interview is completely pointless because they've already made the decision that they're offering that person a job. It's absolutely pointless. We actually benchmark the role with psychometrics, and then we benchmark the candidate, make sure everything matches.
Yeah,
they're not foolproof, psychometric testing. Some people don't like them, but if they're used properly, and I emphasize properly being the key word, they are very, very effective. Lots of people don't use them properly, and that's why they're flawed.
See, I've had psychometric testing done, and it was done as a final stage. So I went through the first stage interview, which was the telephone interview, then a second stage interview, which was with the managing director, and then the final stage was with the technical director and the managing director, but I had to do a psychometric profile before that final interview.
Okay.
So sitting on the other side of the fence, I can now see, like you just said, it's flawed because if you already know that person, you like them, then what's the point in doing the psychometric?
Yeah, it would have to be absolutely, absolutely disastrous for that candidate at that stage to not get the job. But the whole purpose of psychometrics is to benchmark behaviours against the behaviours required for the role. And then once you've benchmarked those behaviours, that you're then able to benchmark each candidate against each other via interview questioning. if you're at the final interview stage, the CEO likes the candidate, the HR director likes the candidate, the engineering director likes the candidate, no test in the world is going to stop that candidate getting that job. There is no test. So
it's a waste of money.
But it is, exactly. And that's where the coaching element comes in, and that's another service that we offer, helping companies on board, helping companies with sales performance. These are all, you know, add-on services in the recruitment world that lots of businesses don't necessarily offer. So, yeah.
So why did you start Mercury Hampton in the first place?
I worked for an organization for coming up to 12 years, a company called the Rain Consultancy Group in Manchester. And I started Rain Consultancy literally on a graduate scheme, ultimately, literally after just leaving the RAF. I know you're an ex-military man as well. So
Yeah.
We all end up in sales or marketing or project management, don't we? I think
it's because we can talk to anybody.
I think we're quite meticulous and methodical as well. I think it works quite
OCD,
well.
I think you've used the word.
Yeah, OCD. I'm major OCD. But no, I worked for that organization. I learned everything I could. I ended up becoming a shareholder of that business and I was a director of the business. But I just wanted my own baby. You know, I wanted something that I could pull all the strings with. Sounds absolutely selfish, but having been with an organization for 12 years in recruitment, that's like a lifetime. If you look at lots of people who work in recruitment, the attrition rates are quite high. They tend to move every 2 years. You know, I've had two positions in 15 years. You know, and myself and Jonathan, who set the business up, we worked with each other at Rain as well. So we continued our success in our own vision under the banner of Mercury Hampton.
What do you put that success down to? How have you become successful?
It's a good question.
I know.
I'd say. There's five areas in the business that we ultimately focus on. And I think the first one is making sure that we define, when we set the business up, we wanted to define what our purpose was. And our purpose was, first of all, the five Ps, defining our purpose. And that was what we touched on that earlier, bridging the gap and digitizing the process. And obviously we needed a foolproof plan for that, which we ultimately did. You know, work with some external consultants to get that planning together. Part of getting all of that plan in place was making sure that all of our processes were in situ. We wanted a world-class process where it was ultimately, Matt, like a prototype. So if I step out of Mercury Hampton, I can prototype this business in any location I want to just by copying off the plan that we've got. The fourth one is making sure that we've got the right people with the right values. And then the fifth one is the performance. And I believe in a business, if you've got all five of those things, if you grade all of those things from 1 to 5 and everything's in a 4 or a 5, it's relatively difficult for a business to not succeed. But behind all of that as well, you've got, I could have given you the typical answer like knowledge, expertise. Anyone's got knowledge and expertise and passion setting up a business because they wouldn't do it in the first place. But you know, I went into this with a clear plan, a clear defined plan, and we were 137% above that plan on March the 14th when the world fell off a cliff. So everything we did so far is proving to be effective.
How are you coping through this period, Chris?
It's difficult. I think it's difficult for everyone.
Have you furloughed workers?
We've had to. Yeah. Not everybody. We've had to take a sensible view on it, though. Recruitment organisations are going to be one of the worst affected for many reasons. I think the first one is recruitment in a period of uncertainty is always one of the first factors to go because it's all about saving jobs. It's about saving jobs rather than creating new ones. The biggest restriction on us, though, is the social distancing. We're not able to meet candidates. They're not able to meet clients. They're not able to start jobs. We're massively affected. So we've had to furlough some people and keep some people.
Do you think there'll be a bounce once this lockdown period is done and recruitment especially will see an uplift because there's going to be some people who weren't furloughed and were just made redundant before the government announced their support scheme. So do you think there's going to be spaces available for you to recruit into? Your market is very much the executive market and the higher end. Do you think there's going to be the spaces still there available or
Well, our market is generally the, I suppose, strategic level, ranging from sort of management professional through to executive board. I think the answer to that, I sound like a politician, it really depends on what sector you're in. So, for example, now, I can give you some perfect live examples. Oil and gas companies right now, panicking, fell off a cliff, understandable. Yeah. Oil prices have plummeted, you know, quicker than Leeds United plummeted out the Premier League, you know. They've absolutely plummeted. Other organisations as well who are selling non-essential products, things like IT systems, phone systems, recruitment, they're not an essential service right now. But businesses are in the chemical industry, water treatment sectors, food industry, supply chain, defence industries. They are in essential markets. So there will still, medical industry as well, still be activity. And I see those companies coming out of this with a couple of bruises, whereas I see companies, you know, in the sectors I mentioned earlier, my sector being one of them, coming out with a couple of broken legs and a couple of broken ribs. So we've just got to get through it as, you know, as best we can.
How are you keeping in touch with your team? Because I'm very much into the Zoom as we're recording on Zoom now. But yeah. I've got a paid plan to Zoom now, and that wasn't something that happened before COVID-19. Do you keep in contact with your furloughed workers? Are you do you have regular updates?
Yeah, I suppose coming from a business that's invested heavily in technology, we were well ahead of this home working curve well before the world started using this. We've been using this for 2 years, so for us it's no real difference. We have Teams, Microsoft Teams meetings 3 times a week. That's including staff who are not furloughed and the ones who are furloughed, and we're just using those discussions for more for welfare, really, making sure we're all okay, keeping team unity, keeping us talking together, making sure everyone's okay. And we've been doing lots of training as well, Matt. So it's been the best time to do training, because our training backlog was horrendous. We've been so busy. We've got our own digital training platform at MickeyHamptonTraining.com.
Nice plug.
Yeah. It's an outstanding training. We don't sell it as a service. It's just an internal platform. We don't sell it. But I might do. I don't know. Probably give me a good idea.
There's a pivot.
Yeah. It's unique to our business, so it probably wouldn't be of any value externally. But we've been getting through all the training. Everyone's done a skills matrix. We're completing skills matrixes just to get us all up to speed. And we're just getting as best prepared for this as we can.
So you say that you're doing that to maintain team morale. What would you say is your corporate culture like? How would you gauge it?
Our culture is probably our greatest power, I would say.
How'd you go about creating that? From my perspective, I think it comes from the top. And you and Jonathan are obviously knowledgeable and experienced in how you run the recruitment because you've done it previously. Yeah. You're just doing it on your own now. Yeah. So does that mean then that you have the time to invest in other people?
It's, believe it or not, Matt, invest more in those people because you want to protect the image for the business, you know, infinitely more than probably what you would if you were working at maybe someone like, I don't know, General Electric or something. It's not necessarily your business. We've been very selective on the people we've hired, but we've focused lots. The recruitment process for us has been all geared around the values of the individuals. So we're using psychometric testing to assess those values. We're not German.
Do you do it on your own staff?
Yeah, we do. They have to. Every single person has to be psychometric tested, and then we assess them properly. They go through a proper assessment center style interview. It's not a German robotic interview. We do have a bit of fun with it, but ultimately, culture is our biggest asset. Culture is the invisible undercurrent in an organization, and in the recruitment sector, Matt, that is one of the biggest areas that they get wrong, and the reason for that is, they're so KPI driven. KPIs are horrendous. It's KPI for KPI's sake, and we do not run the business that way. We have a very mature approach to the business, and because we treat our people with we treat them with respect. We let them ultimately manage their own working days, working weeks. They really, really appreciate that.
I think that's a company's hidden advantage. And when you're advertising for people or you're trying to promote yourselves. I think having a positive and inclusive culture. I mean, at Safi, we posted a video just as COVID-19 hit with over 50 members of staff across the globe, all just saying in various different languages that we are open. Now, that all came about because we're a collective. We are one group and we all believe in the same mission statement and we all try and strive to be included. The CEO at Safi is very big on internal culture and he tries to implement and promote internally as much as he can. When you're trying to externally recruit and bring somebody in, I think corporate culture is your hidden advantage when you're trying to compete against the competitors.
Yeah, it's been a challenge for us, Matt, actually, because we've gone from two people in a room in 2 years to a full office. So every single person we've hired, we've had to make sure that we've, you know, been very, very diligent.
Who was the first person that you recruited?
The first person we recruited into the business was Jack, a guy called Jack Woodcock, who I recruited Jack as a graduate in my last organization. And, you know, he was the first person I reached out to come and join me here. And he's been fantastic. He's been absolutely fantastic.
Was that a difficult decision for you and Jonathan to make at the very start?
No.
Because the first step of bringing somebody in, and this goes not just for experienced company heads, but young entrepreneurs as well, because we had James Sinclair on the last episode, and he recruited his first person, which was a cleaner, at the age of 16, 17.
Yeah.
And he said on the podcast, he said, look, it wasn't a difficult decision at all, because he was then paying somebody to do the £5 an hour tasks, and he was available to do the £50 to £100 an hour, up to £1,000 an hour tasks.
Yeah, it wasn't a difficult decision at all. I'd say the first 7 or 8 people were actually quite easy hires because within our network, we knew people. So
yeah,
we were able to build. It's a little bit like building a football team. I suppose I use Jose Mourinho as maybe not a recent example because he's been a bit crap lately. But if you look at Jose Mourinho, every time he goes into a football club, he pulls players that he's either worked with before or he's...
Harry Redknapp would probably be a better example.
Harry Redknapp, yeah, I love Harry Redknapp. But he's pulled players in and we were able to, literally within the first 6 to 12 months of the business being open, we were able to literally pull all of these people in. And we literally went from me and Jonathan to having 100 years experience in 9 months, I think, something like that, 9 to 12 months. So it was absolutely, you know, frightening. It was only at that stage where the cultural element became so important.
Yeah, yeah. So you and Jonathan are two completely different personalities.
Yeah.
Do you think that's important in a business? If you're going into business as a partner with somebody else, you've obviously both got different skill sets as well. Jonathan's very direct and very to the point.
Yeah.
And you're a little bit more, I don't know the right word, flamboyant?
Flamboyant. Measured.
Measured. There you go.
I'd say, yeah, I know, I agree with your comments. I think, yeah, it does definitely because, you know, complementary skill sets are key. There are certain situations that I'll take a step back and, believe it or not, as brash as John can be, he's really level-headed at times and he'll stop me from doing something sometimes. But if you don't have that other person with you, you might have done the wrong thing. So I think complementary skill sets are key. Yeah. And I think I'd adopt that approach throughout the business as well. Every single person I've hired has been able to add something to the business, I suppose, that I couldn't offer.
Yeah.
And that's the approach we've been taking to achieve the growth that we have.
Have you had any failures in the last 2 years?
With people or with...
Any. I like hearing about people's regrets and failures as well as their successes.
I fail every day. Every day. I fail more times than I succeed. It's just that I hide it well. But I learn from it. but the thing is, there is no such thing as failing, is there really?
It's learning.
It's all about learning. And that's something I say when I hire someone into a new role who's a graduate or is a trainee or whatever, is their objective for the first year is to make as many mistakes as they possibly can. Without making the mistakes, they're never going to learn and they're never ever going to be able to elevate themselves to the next level. Big failures, Matt. None that I can put in. Again, a series of little failures every single day.
Yeah.
Major failures. Nothing that I've severely lost sleep over. Nothing that springs to mind.
No, we'll leave it there then. This is a two-pronged sort of question. How do your people see you and how do you want them to see you? Because personal branding is big on social media and social networks, and especially on LinkedIn, which is a business platform. How do you want them to see you, and how do you think they see you?
Well, I know the answer to both of these objectively, because as part of our psychometric testing, we analyze this, which is part of understanding the collective, the unity between the whole team. When we did our test, my impression of myself was quite similar to what the other people thought of me. It wasn't completely off scale. I think they see me though as someone who's, I'm frontline active, Matt. I'm passionate. They trust me. I know that for certain. I put their needs over mine. They see that I do that. I continue to do that, and they, they get ultimately, my support 24/7. If they rang me at 11:45 at night, I'd answer the phone. My missus would probably tell me off, but I probably would still answer the phone. And we have a completely open door culture, at all times. So it works for us.
What is your definition then of a leader or a boss?
Definition of a leader or a boss. Yeah. I get asked this quite a lot,
Do you?
Yeah, I get asked this quite a lot. I interview senior level candidates all the time, and that we always have this conversation about leadership styles and about the behavior of their CEO. And some of them are transactional leaders, some of them are transformational leaders. I would use that example. A boss is very transactional, short term.
Can transactional leaders deliver long term success?
I think they can. I think it really depends on the individual, but I think, and it depends on the sector as well, Matt. If the role is a long term, like the position that your role with as MD of SAFI, you've got short term transactional objectives and long term objectives, projects. I think if someone was selling pens for a living, I don't know if a transformational leader is necessarily needed, but yeah, I think it all depends on the person. It really does.
Because I would, to use the football analogy again, Jose Mourinho, I'd say, is a transactional.
Yeah, he's transactional. Manager. He is 100%.
And then Jurgen Klopp is a transformational.
Yeah, I would. Where I would see someone like Sir Alex Ferguson as both.
Yes, and when you marry the two together, that's when you get incredible results.
Yeah, that's the problem with Jose. He's very transactional. Klopp is a transformational leader, but Alex Ferguson was able to do all of it.
What would you say to young sales staff or young executives who are moving up into management? What three pieces of advice would you give them in order for them to be able to succeed?
I'd say
that's a good question again, isn't it?
No, my answers are going to be quite cheesy, Matt. Never ever compromise on your standards. Never compromise your own standards.
See, that's not cheesy. That's completely relevant.
Yeah, never compromise your own standards. Never make excuses. You take accountability. If something doesn't happen, you've got to make it happen. Don't blame someone else. Don't blame the market. Don't blame anyone else. Just take accountability for it. And the third thing, which is pretty obvious, is work hard and observe the success around you. Look at the people who are doing things well. Why are they doing it well? Why are they better than you? Why is the guy who's the top performer? Why is he the top performer? Why is the guy who's on a performance review every month? Why is he on that performance review? Just observe what's going on around you. If you do that, if you do those three things, you'll succeed.
I agree. And I'll tell you what, one piece of advice that I would give, and that is, if you can't deliver it, never say yes that you can. That's one thing that I've learned on sitting on boards and being asked, do you think that we can reach this number in sales? Or do you think you can, being the eternal optimist and forever a salesperson, the tendency would be to say, yes, of course I can deliver it. Yes, of course we can. But when you're in that position and you're sitting on a board and people are judging you on terms of results, if you don't deliver it, you've ballsed up. So what we do on every podcast, Chris, is we ask the same five questions at the end, the Sales Change 5, and I'm going to ask them to you in any order. So the first question is, which leader do you look up to the most?
So I'd say Sir Alex Ferguson.
And why?
Because he is factually, unarguably, the greatest coach.
Are you a Manchester United fan, Chris?
Well, yeah, but I can explain why, though. I can explain why. I've read his book, Leading. A lot of people say Jose Mourinho or Guardiola or Pep, but they haven't achieved for enough time yet. Pep's won a couple of titles. Jose's won a couple of titles, but he's been sacked twice. Klopp's not really won anything yet. I mean, they are going to win the league, and they should win the league, but he's not really won anything.
Unless they cancel the Premier League. But
yeah, I don't think they will. They should win the league. No. They've done well. But Alex Ferguson was able to adapt and transition from 1970s, 80s culture, negotiating with some guy in a pub over a pint to negotiating with Cristiano Ronaldo, Carlos Tevez, Wayne Rooney, Rio Ferdinand. He's transitioned through three decades. And I do class him as a coach and manager and a leader. Don't know if I class the others as a coach and manager and leader.
That's very true. That's very true, yeah. What's the worst job that you could ever do and why?
Oh, sell valves.
Shut up.
I'm only joking.
It has its perks.
I'm only joking. I find all of your sector really interesting, actually. I could definitely work in your sector. I would say anything to do with blood, which is pretty strange coming from someone who's been in the military. My best friend, he was a paramedic. It's not my thing.
Have you got a phobia of blood?
I just don't like blood or dead people. I don't think many people like dead people, actually. I'm probably not just stating the obvious, but
I'll tell you what, I had a this is completely off piece, but my work experience when I was at school in London was to go around with the police for a week, and the police force that I went with, and I won't name them, got into massive trouble because they took me to a morgue because they needed to identify a body. So they were pulling dead bodies out of the freezers to go and identify them. So yeah, they got in massive trouble, but I won't name who they were.
That's good. That's good. Well, your work experience is better than mine. So,
what did you want to be when you grew up?
Strangely, ironically, a police officer.
Did you?
Yeah, I was accepted to when I left the RAF. You would have done resettlement training, Matt, when you left the army.
Yeah,
I was accepted into Greater Manchester Police on the high potential development scheme. So they fast track you through to sergeant and things like that. But I changed my mind because having just come out of the military, I think I just wanted to try something in the commercial sector. I interviewed with a couple of organisations for field sales roles and marketing roles and project management roles. And I actually just ended up falling into a role in the executive recruitment market. And
the rest is history.
Find myself here now. Well, I don't work Christmas. I don't work weekends. I don't work shifts. I don't have to call anyone sir or sergeant ever again.
You don't have to polish your boots.
I don't have to polish my boots. I can wear trainers, you know. But I have a lot of respect for the police, and they should be paid more money than they are. I have a lot of respect for the armed forces, the nurses, prison services, the fight, you know, paramedics. I'm big, you know. I'm having come from that background, I have a lot of respect for them, and doing a great job right now.
Yeah, here. It seems pointless to me going on from that. It's like my next question is, what was the last book that you read? I mean, how can I follow that you've just called out all of the police force and the NHS for the great work they're doing, and then me ask you what was the last book you read?
The last book I read is, which I've not finished yet, is a book called The Secret.
Oh, you're the second person to say this on the podcast, and yeah. I've got the book and I've never read it.
It's about the laws of attraction. Now, having read the book, and I'm about three quarters of the way through the book, I actually use all of this stuff anyway.
Because I've got it, and I thought, when I picked up the book for the first time, I thought it was a bit airy-fairy, but...
It is.
Is it worth it?
Yeah, it is. It's a bit, at first, you've got to... It takes a lot of patience getting into it. It is a little bit waffly, I think.
Yeah.
But something I will say, though, is that it's true. You know, there is nothing more powerful than the power of the mind. There is nothing more powerful. There's nothing more powerful than the power of the mind. You know, if you think about the power of a relentless, committed human being, more powerful? With you know, that power alone, if you could harness that power, you can achieve anything. Whether you're working in my sector, you're a policeman, you can achieve anything. And it's all about getting your mind conditioned for the greatest that it can possibly be.
It's, and I completely agree, because when I was in a really, let's say, crap company and I was working, like, without blowing my own trumpet, I'm a very capable and very talented salesperson. I'm able to sell very easily. And when I'm not motivated or inspired, I can sell to the, and I'm sure this happens to lots and lots of different salespeople, but I sell to the target rather than selling to overachieve. And that's because I wasn't motivated and I wasn't inspired to contribute to the cause, let's say. When I then found a purpose and I found a goal that I wanted to go after, and my goal now is my career and it's the sales change and it's Safi and it's growing businesses. When I found that purpose, it's, and I believe that I can achieve it, and it's, and it is that, it's when you believe you can achieve, when you believe and you can achieve it, you will. There is nothing to stop you. Everybody is born equal. Everybody can achieve what they want to achieve. They just have to apply.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all about, I think, as individuals, meeting our own individual needs and wants. And this is when it comes, this is your own needs and wants and the needs and wants of everyone who works around you. So, you know, part of my leadership is watching and observing closely what the needs and wants of people around me are, because they're all different. Yeah. And make, yeah, without making sure that I'm compromising all of mine, which is sometimes difficult, because I do tend to be someone who puts everyone else before myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Laws of Attraction, Secret, decent book.
I'm gonna have to start reading it. The final question is: Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn?
Oh well, this is an easy one. Let me think. Well, I don't want to share pictures of my tea with people, so Facebook's out. Yeah, Twitter. Yeah, Twitter's okay. Instagram, I don't want to take pictures of myself oiled up, sending it to my mates. So Instagram's out. LinkedIn all day long. If I'm honest, Matt, I don't use social media. I'm not really a social animal. LinkedIn I use because of my profession. Throwing a little derail in there is I tend to use WhatsApp, which is not on that list.
And we've had WhatsApp from other people before as their preferred social network.
I suppose a question for yourself. How do people find the time in this modern society to be on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp, and Instagram?
I tell you what, how I do it, and it appears that I'm on all of them all of the time.
Okay.
And I schedule a lot of posts.
Okay.
So my Instagram posts are scheduled on a Sunday. So when I update the website for the latest podcast episode and I upload the podcast to the podcast platform, a lot of my Instagram posts are scheduled, and that's for the Sales Change page. My personal Instagram page, I don't think I've uploaded for 6-7 weeks, and that's because I upload when I've got time, and I haven't got time. LinkedIn as well, I also schedule posts on LinkedIn. It's a great time saver. It's just finding a platform where you can schedule a post. But there are people that just sit on it daily. And again, it goes back to that applying themselves. If they applied themselves to finding a decent career or finding a job, as much as they apply themselves to Facebook, and this is a sweeping generalization, but if they did that, they would be much more successful than they are.
Definitely. I think as well, it's a case of when back onto this topic, when the business was set up, naturally for us, it made sense to focus all of the attention on LinkedIn and do LinkedIn very well rather than focus on the others. But personally, I am quite a private person, Matt. If you're not in my phone or on WhatsApp, then take it that I probably don't want to speak to you.
Am I on your phone, Chris?
You're in my phone. Yeah.
Definitely. Yes.
I've only met him. No, I'm just normally so busy, Matt. I've got a young family and I work long hours, and I've got a young family, and you know, it literally consumes all of my time. So I just haven't got time to do these other things, unfortunately. I wish I did, but I don't.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Whoa. Don't go anywhere yet. Julio, tell people where they can get more information.
If you like the podcast, go visit saleschange.co.uk.
That's good, but you said .do.
Saleschange.co.uk. Why don't you head... No. It's bad. It's bad. Go to saleschange.co.uk and... saleschange.co.uk and subscribe to our incredible newsletter. Thanks for listening.